This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
What's up, everyone? You are back with District Baseball as ranking season carries on. Today, we are covering the top 15 outfielders in baseball, so it's going to be a jam-packed episode. A lot to get to, a lot of players to discuss, and some controversy within our rankings, as Trey and I have very different rankings this time around. But Trey, what's going on?
Nick, we got a comment on one of our top lists that called us brain dead. So I think we're doing a really good job.
That's how so you know far. You made it.
Yeah, definitely. So that makes me feel better.
What was the point of controversy?
It was we put Luis Arraez over Ozzy Albies, which was one spot ahead, pretty sure.
I mean, yeah, like,
and like,
okay,
they're pretty similar in terms of numbers. I don't know. I don't think we're brain dead for that one, but you know, if you're pissing some people off, you're probably doing something right.
Guess what? I mean, MLB Network literally left Ozzy Albies out of their top 10 completely.
They did. Yeah. So we got we got that over the experts, I would say.
Yeah. Clearly, like, we put Albies too high.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's what I gather. So I guess we're brain dead for having Albies that high to begin with.
Yep. But I found that pretty funny. Today we're going to tackle our top 15 outfielders. We're combining all outfield positions into one list. Makes it a little easier on us, honestly.
And we're going to be, you get some good conversations too. Cause like the left field, the depth isn't great, but then you get to like right field and you're just like, holy hell. And plus a lot of these guys, they'll play center for 40 games and right field for 60 games and then DH. So it's easier to do all outfielders.
Yeah. So we're going to be starting, like we've been doing, at number one, going through to five, and then we'll actually be splitting 6 through 10 and 11 through 15 into tiers at the end.
Let's do it.
But our number one choice, this was tough. We actually had different choices here, but we ended up going with Aaron Judge at number one. This was my pick for number one. Nick had Ronnie, who's, spoiler alert, number two. I went with Judge. He didn't play the full season last year. He missed some games. I think he only played 106 total. But on a rate basis, he was excellent. He wasn't quite as good as the year previous, but how could you be after that season? But you know, if he continued and played like a full 162 or close to it, he probably ends up around 8 F4 and is in the MVP conversation. Of course, Shohei would win it in this case, this past season anyways. But I think Judge having those two back-to-back seasons, you know, from a rate standpoint, is a good sign for him going forward. It's just, can he continue to stay on the field? He did 2 years ago. Last year, he mostly stayed on the field, just missed a bit of time. So just keeping healthy for him, because I really think he's got Hall of Fame potential if he can stay on the field.
Yeah. No problem with Judge at one. I think Judge and Acuna are the clear top right now. And it's not like a huge gap from quote unquote tier one to tier two. But there is a gap. It's those two guys right now, especially with Mookie shifting to the infield. Yeah. If Mookie had stayed in the outfield, he would be in that tier for me as well. And then there's some other guys we'll talk about in tier two where it's just like injuries or consistency or defense or, you know, one knock on their game. But when you get to Judge and Acuna, it's pretty clear all around. It's just, you know, in Judge's case, it's health. In Acuna's case, it's not quite consistency because he's always been good. But, you know, he finally won his first MVP. Can he replicate it? You know, or is he going to drop down to that like great player, but not just a smidge under MVP candidate type player, which I think he's in the former of those two. I think Acuna is obviously Very good. I'm not breaking any news there. But as far as the rest of the list, we have Juan Soto, Yordan Alvarez, and Corbin Carroll rounding out the top five. And I think that this is really where the discussion starts. So just some background on how we do our rankings. And I know people are going to see like Juan Soto at three and call us brain dead again. How we do our rankings is Trey comes up with his list. I come up with my list. We do the averages, and then that's our comprehensive list. But when we have a tie, as we did with Soto, Yordan, and Carroll, we just use career war. So in this case, Soto came in first, Yordan second, and Corbin Carroll third. If you have Corbin Carroll third and Soto down at like seven, we were talking about this before we started recording, like I'm fine with that, because I think three through eight or nine on our list are fairly interchangeable. They're all kind of in the same tier. We're just talking about 1 through 5, 6 through 10, and 11 through 15, just so, you know, we can kind of keep our head on straight and keep our thoughts organized. But this is a really, really competitive group, and I have no real issues if your list differs. I think the players themselves, they all deserve to be here. So if you're like, oh, Soto's not top 15, you're an idiot. Like, I just won't believe what you're saying. But I still believe in Soto. I don't think I have to do too much, you know, arguing on his behalf. I think going to New York is going to be a test, because we've seen plenty of players that are good players actually go to the Yankees and struggle. Just like we've seen some like no name players go to the Yankees and be really good, like AKA Matt Carpenter. but this is a good test. And for me, obviously being a Nationals fan, having seen him in the World Series in the playoffs, Soto lives for the big moments and the bright lights. Like that's his like favorite thing. And that's why he was so excited about San Diego. If you heard him talk or pressers or anything like that, San Diego was like destined for a prime time playoff run, all that good stuff. And obviously last year was a real disappointment for them. And I don't think it was necessarily Soto's fault. Was he like quite to the level that we expect? No, but 5.5 WAR, 930 OPS. And at the end of the day, he still hit 275 with 35 home runs, and everyone's acting like he's overrated and terrible. And I think it's just the 2022 season after the trade is like still ingrained in people's mind, which, you know, is stupid.
And the Padres underperformance in general, probably.
Right. Right. So they just attributed it to Soto, but like he still led the league in walks. He had a 410 on base percentage. He's fine. He's fine. Yeah, the defense is a concern, but if you throw him in left, like you're not really going to care, to be honest. If you throw him in right, you know, there's an argument that he's hurting you a little bit, because typically your best or your better corner outfielder is going to play right field with stronger arm and, you know, throws to third and all that stuff. But if Juan Soto's a left fielder for the rest of his career, like it's fine. You have Kyle Schwarber playing left field. You have these absolute terrible outfielders playing in the outfield because they can hit. And Soto is always going to be able to hit. He's proven that. It's insane to me that he's still only 25. I feel like he should at least be 28, 29.
Yeah, him and Ronald are both just so young and so great.
Unreal. Soto definitely signed a long-term extension like Ronald did, right? Damn.
Okay. You had to hit me with that one, huh?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Trust me, that was
already a bad day to be a Nats boomerang.
Yeah, it was a boomerang. It came back and got me too. So yeah. Soto comes in at number three, but he's, like I said, tied with Yordan and Carroll in our rankings. I was the highest on Soto. I had him at three myself. Trey, you had Corbin Carroll at three, and then I had Yordan at five. You had Yordan at four. Yordan, phenomenal player, just not the greatest outfielder. He's more of a DH, but we're not doing DH rankings, so we threw him in here. And honestly, he still fits in just fine. Like he's not like an outlier on this list by any means.
Yeah, definitely. And honestly, his defense isn't as bad as you might expect, because right. He does have a good arm. He can throw some people out. And also when he plays left field in Houston, it's basically like the shortest porch in left field that you can get. So he doesn't have to range that far. It's probably pretty nice for him. Doesn't have to run too much. But yeah, his bat is so elite to the point where it doesn't matter. It just doesn't
Not
matter.
At all.
And I was trying to justify putting Soto above him, and I think you can, just because Soto has more experience, which is crazy because, like you said, he's only 25. But Yordan's last two hitting seasons were just so ridiculous that I couldn't move him out of that fourth spot.
31 home runs in 114 games. Like, if he plays 140 games, he's going to hit over 40 easily.
Yeah,
and what's
he's,
crazy is...
Sorry, I was going to say, I was going to say he's that dude in the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the home run off Robbie Ray is iconic. Like, it doesn't get
I mean,
the,
there's
the,
like three
the
of
hype.
Them, though.
Yeah, that it doesn't one's... get the hype that like the Joey Bats home run does, but it's iconic.
That one, it's that one, and then the and then he 450 dead center in the in the World Series. Obviously, that's the one that more people probably think of. But yeah, that Robbie Ray one was really funny because everyone knew it was coming.
Yeah,
literally everybody knew it was about to happen. I mean, it was actually crazy. But that
What's crazy is Soto led the league in walks. I don't have it in front of me anymore. It was like 132 or something like that. So Yordan had 69 walks, so less than half.
Nice.
Or just about half, maybe slightly above. Math is not my strong suit. But his on-base percentage is like exactly the same. He's a 407. Like, he is so good.
It's
gets
just
on base so much.
His combination of bat-to-ball skills and power are pretty rare. I mean, he doesn't strike out like a power hitter. And
kind of insane. He only finished 13th in MVP voting last year.
Yeah, I mean, once he has a full season, like where he's fully healthy and maybe plays half his games in the outfield, then you're looking at an MVP type deal. Because I don't know if voters would give an MVP to a DH, like a
they
DH
won't.
only.
They barely let them in the Hall of Fame. Granted,
It's
that's
true.
A whole different can of worms and a problem still.
Yeah, but no, if he can play like, you know, half his games in left field and hit like that, he'll be in the MVP conversation. And then we got Corbin Carroll, who comes in at 5. I think I had him at 3.
You did.
Just because, you know, with a lot of young guys, you're always like, you know, I want to see it again. And I understand. And I, for a lot of guys, that's the case. This is the exception for me. This guy, I don't need to see more. I think this is what he's going to be / he's going to get better. Like, that was his rookie year. I mean, think about how crazy that is to say. I think he's going to be in the MVP conversation for years. I mean, I can't see him exiting that with his combination of speed, power, hitting. His defense needs a bit of improvement, I will say, but they were also playing. They don't know exactly what outfield position they want to put him in yet. So once he settles into a spot, I'll be more willing to judge him on his defense. But I really can't see him dipping below this. I mean, he had like one semi bad stretch during the season and immediately broke out of that and was amazing in the playoffs at this age. I mean, it's just crazy to me that these guys come up so young now and just are this good already. Just wild stuff. But I'm super excited to see him and what the Diamondbacks in general can do this season. They should be a very fun team to watch.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, if you've been keeping up with these episodes, you kind of know where I stand on Corbin Carroll. I just need to see one more just to be sure. This is a business decision. I'm not going to overreact and, you know, go crazy on a one hit wonder. And I don't think he is a one hit wonder. But again, this is a business decision. I just want to be sure of that. All right. Let's move on to 6 through 10. Coming in at number 6, we have Fernando Tatis Jr., who, before I rattle off the rest of the list, I just want to say he's not on watch for me. I still think he's very good, and he kind of transitioned seamlessly to the outfield. He has the arm for it, and honestly, he's probably better suited at right field than shortstop, even if Xander Bogaerts wasn't there. But I was kind of impressed of how well he transitioned to the outfield. Obviously won a gold glove, even though that's more of an offensive award nowadays than anything. But he wasn't great last year offensively. Like, we can just put that out there. It's not like a a frowned upon thing.
It's not a hot take.
Say right, exactly. That being said, I think he'll bounce back. Obviously, he's had some off the field stuff and some injuries, so maybe it's like a sort of second year bump for him in some respects. So I think he's going to be just fine, but we can acknowledge that last year was not his best. Number 7, Julio Rodriguez. Number 8, Mike Trout. Number 9, Kyle Tucker. And number 10, Luis Robert. So I was the highest on Tatis. I had him 4, just because with how well he did in the outfield defensively and knowing what he's capable offensively, he's like my pick to jump into that tier with Judge and Acuna.
Yeah, I love that.
So like it just obviously putting it all together now, but of this kind of second tier 3 through 8, like Tatis is my favorite to make that jump and be a consistently top 3 outfielder. So that's why I had him at 4, but you had him at 8. So what are your thoughts on Tatis?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. Just like, what is he now going forward? Because like, the bat just wasn't his level of play in 21 was pretty ridiculous. So he was quite a bit under that in terms of his batting last year. But if there is one player, from this tier that has the best chance to jump up and even maybe win an MVP, mm-hmm. It's probably Tatis because he has that ceiling. And
yep.
Man, whoever decided to put him in right field, just round of applause.
You deserve a raise. Yeah.
Round of applause because, yep. I mean, he was built for that position. It makes so much more sense for him to play there than at short, to me. So I absolutely love that. And I think that he could absolutely move. I think you're totally spot on there that he's the best chance to move back in that top 5. I also think our number 8 pick could possibly jump back in the top 5. The only problem is he's never on the field anymore, and that's Mike Trout.
Yeah.
This is definitely the toughest ranking of any of these players for me, because he's Mike Trout, and he's one of the best yeah. players to ever play the game. And yet he
still
has to come
arguably
in.
the best player of all time. Arguably.
It's like, yeah.
I think Shohei comfortably has that now, but he's still arguably the best player of all time.
Like, in terms of pure talent, I don't, it's tough to argue, especially with his
not even talent, first decade. Like individual accomplishments too. Like yeah. He is unreal. Yeah. Sorry, but go ahead.
Yeah, it just like kind of breaks my heart to have to put him down this far, but he's played.
Feels wrong.
He's played a third of a season twice, basically, in the last 3 years. And that's not his fault. It just happens to be like, if you can't play, eventually you have to get put down a little bit just because other guys are
put down
on the field. I didn't mean it like that. We don't have to shoot him. I'm just kidding.
Old Yeller.
It's not old Yeller. Don't worry. He's not that old. He doesn't have rabies. But yeah, no, it's so yeah, if he plays a full season and is Mike Trout again, then he'll jump right back up. It's just, can he stay on the field? That's pretty much it.
He's played in 290 games out of a possible 546 in the last 4 years. So it's concerning to say the least. And that's something I meant to bring up with Judge. Like Trout's entering age 32, Judge is entering age 32.
Yeah.
So, and especially with Judge's size, like he's just a big body, more prone to injury because he's a bruiser and all this stuff. So that this is something to watch. But yeah, with Trout, he's still in his prime. I think he can have an MVP type season still, but it's a matter of staying on the field.
Yeah. And then we had Julio Rodriguez sandwiched in between those two. I mean, J-Rod's the man. I think everyone likes J-Rod at this point.
He's
an all-around great player. And I think I had him at 5. And you
had him at 5. I had him at 8.
Yeah. And this is just like they're interchangeable at this point, besides the top two. So Julio at seven, it makes sense to me. And I'm excited to see him and the Mariners because they made a ton of weird moves this offseason, and I just kind of want to see how that's going to operate.
It felt like I don't mean to go into Mariners tangent, but it felt like a litany of like lateral moves. Like they made a lot of trades to like confuse people, but it's like almost the same team in a lot of respects. It
definitely confused me, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't think they're like head and shoulders above last year's team.
Yeah. So. I think a key as well is him getting off to a better start because as J-Rod goes, the Mariners go. I think that we can agree with that. Because when he was getting four hit games every week, they were winning. And when he was striking out a lot in the beginning of the season, they weren't. And so if he can get off to a better start, that's going to help them and just stay consistent throughout because him and that starting pitching staff are basically the key for that team making the playoffs, I think.
Yeah, for J-Rod, it's a little bit of show me one more, even though his 2022 season was still great. I'm just trying to figure out where his ceiling is right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think because like Corbin Carroll, for instance, obviously a year in change in terms of MLB experience. But like the highs that Corbin Carroll hit in half a season last year were insane. Like Ronald Acuna level, MVP conversation level. And Julio has done that in spurts. What, he had like 16 hits in a series or something like that. So it's definitely there. I'm just trying to figure out how high it goes. Like, is he going to jump into that top three, or is he just going to comfortably be in this 5 to 10 range for the foreseeable future? I could see both outcomes.
Yeah. It's mostly consistency as well. He just has to stay consistent throughout the full season.
Yeah. I would like to see the strikeout percentage. It did drop like just over a percentage from 22 to 23. I would like to see it come down a little bit more, walk rate increase just a little bit more. I don't need him to walk like Soto level or anything like that, but just a little bit more. Like, let's even out that K to walk ratio a little bit better. And I think that's really going to help him. But 32 home runs and 103 RBIs, 37 stolen bases, like this guy does it all. So I again, tier based, it's not like I have Julio so much lower than a guy like Tatis or Carroll or anything like that.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, and then we have rounding out this tier, Kyle Tucker and Luis Robert. And different ways that they got here, I would say. Kyle Tucker's been pretty consistently great for the last, 5 years almost.
Almost forgotten a little bit.
Yeah, he kind of gets overlooked.
Altuve and Bregman and Yordan and obviously all the other guys they've had there.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed with his defense. Hopefully he'll be able to bounce back from that because he's been a pretty solid defender in his career, but last year wasn't the best, but everything else he does well. He steals bases, walks, doesn't strike out, hits for power, pretty much anything you want he can do. And then Luis Robert stolen at number 10, bases. Yep. Luis Robert at number 10 was kind of like the guy we were just waiting for. Like, we just were kind of waiting to see it for a full season because we kind of were expecting that this talent level was here. And everyone was, not just us. And it finally happened. He broke out fully. Almost 40 home runs, and he played great defense. He's a good base runner. Really, the only concern is that K rate, which has always been high with him and kind of seems like it's going to stay there. But if he can, pump 40 homers as a center fielder, then I don't think anyone's really going to care. But we just have to make sure that he can continue to sustain that because, this was the first time he really sustained this for a full year. Like he did this for partial seasons where he had some injuries. But this was he actually played 145 games. So that was a big step for him.
Yeah. For both these guys, like K rate jumps out to me. Kyle Tucker has decreased his in every single year he's been a professional baseball player, and now has a walk percentage that's higher than his K rate, and while sustaining power numbers, which is fantastic. And Luis Robert, like you said, stayed healthy for this full year, put up great numbers, but his K rate's near 30. So it's just, it jumped up almost 10% from 22 to 23. Granted, limited sample size in 22, but just something to keep an eye on. The talent is clearly there. I had him at 10, you had him at 11, so, which I think is about right, because like his ceiling is still very high. It's just, again, trying to figure out where he's going to ultimately end up. But if he can stay healthy, then obviously he's going to get an opportunity to cut down on his K rate and things like that. But it was just such a huge jump in the strikeout number. And he never really walked much, which again is not like a terrible thing if you're putting up 40 home runs. But, you know, if you're a boom bust strikeout or home run guy, it makes it a little bit tough to bear through sometimes. It's a little bit of a roller coaster. So
yeah,
exactly. All right, moving on to 11-15 as we round out our top 15 outfielders. Number 11, we have Adolis Garcia. Number 12, Cody Bellinger. Number 13, Michael Harris the second. 14, Brandon Nimmo, and 15, Randy Arozarena. So Adolis Garcia, obviously the big playoff performance. I think that really solidified him in a lot of people's minds, but he also had like a good season. I think that kind of got overlooked because he didn't hit for like a high average or anything like that, but he still put up the great power numbers that obviously were on display in the playoffs. 39 home runs, 107 RBIs en route to a World Series championship. He strikes out a lot too, which I just feel like mentioning, not to beat a dead horse on this topic, but just to kind of be a little bit more fair. Defense was solid, but the offense really is what sets him apart here. Late bloomer, and apparently if you get a castaway outfielder from the Cardinals, that's like your franchise player.
Yeah, everyone should be looking to implore that strategy.
So buy Lane Thomas stock is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, running out number 16, Lane Thomas.
Yeah, Adolis basically had the same season as Luis Robert, except that he walks more. So I'm a little bit more hopeful that he'll be more consistent. Doesn't have the stolen base like Luis Robert does. But, you know, they had very similar seasons, and they both hit almost 40 homers. They're both really fun outfielders. Makes sense that they're back-to-back on this list. And then, yeah, my most interesting candidate in this section is obviously Cody Bellinger.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's weird. His career's weird.
Very.
His trajectory here, and it's not normal, to say the least. So, you know, he went from an MVP to one of the worst players in baseball to an all-star again. So what is he? I'm willing to bet that he's actually good a little bit. And I think that he has kind of somewhat figured it out, because he didn't hit in exactly the same way that he was before. He actually changed up his hitting style to be a bit more contact centric, and it helped him. So I like that he's shown that he can make adjustments, and that's a big deal for me personally. So I like to have him in that top 15, and wishing him the best. I hope he can continue to play well.
Yeah,
wherever he ends up, he's still a free agent.
Yeah, I was gonna say we'll see where he ends up. Hopefully in Washington. So yeah, it's just very odd. But you said you were willing to bet that he's a pretty good player. I agree. I think like the arguments people say for to not sign Cody Bellinger is like, oh, he has very soft contact rates, and you know, if you look back at his 2019 season, you know, his barrel rates and hard contact and exit velo, like they're all near the top of the league. Whereas last year, he had a great year, but like all of those were in the bottom quarter of the league. So it's just like, who is this player? And I get the hesitation, because those are two very opposite ends of the spectrum and extreme that you just don't feel comfortable with giving a long-term deal to. So it's not a huge surprise to me that he's still unsigned, just knowing how the free agent market shakes out in baseball a lot of the time. But that being said, I'm still comfortable having him as a foundational piece. Like, he plays multiple positions at a high level. He wasn't as great last year. And who knows what might've been going on there, but he's like above average defensively. He really cut down on the strikeout numbers, which you mentioned. He's more of a contact hitter, hit above 300 for a 307 average, highest of his career. Great on base, 356, 525 slug. I mean, if he's a 25 home run kind of guy and plays multiple positions, keeps his strikeout percentage below 20%, like, this is a top 15 outfielder. And if you're a top 15 outfielder, you deserve to be paid. So, yeah, he's definitely an interesting candidate, but I think the 21-22 stint on the Dodgers is more of an outlier than who he actually is. I think injuries and just external, internal pressure got to him there. And now that he's new situation and maybe another new situation, if he doesn't resign with Chicago, he can kind of settle in a little bit more than having, you know, the weight of an entire franchise on you. Because like with the Dodgers, and this is more of the mental aspect, like if you don't win the World Series, you're a choke artist. Like, look at Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw is probably like best pitcher of all time. And like, people hate on him because of the playoff performance. Like, and that's how it is with every Dodgers player. Like Mookie Betts, one of the best players in baseball. They're like, oh, well, look at, he was 0-for-11 last year at the playoffs. It's just like, if you don't win in LA, you're nothing. So yeah. I can get why you might struggle there. So I think Cody Bellinger is just fine, is my point. So yeah, agree with you there.
I actually, last point on Bellinger was, I was wondering, will he take a 1-year deal? Because I also doubt it, but I was thinking, because nothing's materialized, do you prove it again and then get even more of a payday afterwards? If you do it twice, then you're like, well, look at that, I did it twice, now you have to pay me. Probably not going to happen. That was just a thought that I had.
If last year wasn't, I mean, he was good last year. He was an all-star. Like, if he had ended really poorly or had gotten hurt, then yeah, maybe. But I think he'll hold out, and he's not getting $300 million, which is probably what Boris is shooting for. But he could get a long-term deal. I mean, shoot, the Giants will sign anyone with a pulse that wants to play there. Like, I am shocked he's already not a San Francisco Giant.
Yeah, that does make sense as a good fit.
Although they just signed Jorge Soler.
Right. That happened at like 2 a.m. the other night.
Yeah, yeah. I think like on the night the Super Bowl was being played.
Yeah,
too,
I mean, so. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Really got buried there.
Everyone knows.
Number 13, Michael Harris II, another prominent young star for the Braves. Just
another
embarrassment
one.
Of riches. Yep. I don't have much to say on him. I don't think he's ever going to be to the level of Acuna or have the ascension that like Austin Riley did, but he is a very, very solid and capable player. And I kind of like, he plays a great defense, great center field, like comfortably above average offensively, maybe not crazy power numbers, but man, it's crazy how the Braves have turned out this young talent. And Michael Harris, he's going to get overlooked just with who's on his team, but yeah. He is very, very good and might be a little low, but that's just because there's so many good outfielders, especially when you combine the three positions like we did here.
Yeah, it actually hurts seeing some of these guys. Like, I'm like, damn, yeah. Adolis Garcia is number 11.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but he has to be because of all these other guys.
Yeah. So where else are you going to put him?
Yeah. I agree. I think, his offensive ceiling isn't as high as some of those other guys. A 115 WRC plus, I could see him getting to like a 130 in a good year. But nothing really much higher than that, but everything else. I mean, I think this guy might be the scariest center field arm out there. There's a specific throw he made against the Nationals,
yep,
where he guns down Luis Garcia from Narnia. I don't even know how he made this throw was unbelievable. unbelievable throw. I had thought he had no chance, gunned him. It was crazy. So defensively, he is elite, and I can see him being a multi-time Gold Glover out there.
Yep, for sure.
And he's got the speed as well to be a stolen base threat. I'd like to actually see him run a little bit more. I think that he's capable of being, not to Acuna's level or anything, but 40 stolen bases, I think he could do it.
Especially with today's rules.
Yeah, with the new rules. Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I like him. Unfortunately, he's on the Braves. So it just like kind of hurts.
And then number four, about many of their players.
Yeah, number 14 is your favorite player, Mr. Brandon Nimmo, that you love.
I left him off my list. Yeah, just out of spite.
Just out of spite. Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair. He's like right around this area. He's just been consistently solid for the last three seasons, so I felt like he deserved a spot in the top 15. It will be interesting, though, because he's moving to left field, which can, I mean, regardless, that's going to hurt your defense just because it's, you know, the, what's the,
I mean, Harrison Bader's playing center.
Yeah. So. I was trying to think of what's the word I'm looking for? Oh my God. The defensive spectrum where you lose. Wow. I can't think of it.
I have no idea what you're trying to say.
I know. I'm trying to think of the right term that I know, and it's just blanking. Anyways, you know how a DH gets penalized for being a DH and a center fielder, even if they're a bad center fielder.
The perceived value.
Yeah. What the heck is the term? Yeah. I know it. I can't think of it. I'm blanking on the spot.
Yeah. I don't know the term, but I kind of know what you're saying now.
Yeah. So he's going to be negatively impacted in that way. However, it's supposed to be easier to play left field and center. So maybe it'll kind of even out in that
way. He wasn't great in center last year.
No,
like he wasn't, but he wasn't great.
But he used to be terrible, and he's improved to be like somewhat okay. And I think that's valiant in itself. But if you want to talk about the next guy who's a little bit more fun for you, go ahead.
Number 15, Randy Arozarena, as previously mentioned. And listen, if you look at the surface stats, if you're just a box score watcher, like he's not going to like jump out on you. But man, Randy Arozarena just has grit. And that's really all I can say about it. And I know that's not the most analytical breakdown when you're doing a top 10, top 15 list. And the defense needs some work. Like it's going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
But like, if he was on my team, I would love him.
Like, you just want this guy on your playoff roster,
right? It just feels like he's the running back you turn to when you need like four hard earned yards. Like that's the comp I have for Randy Arozarena.
Positional adjustment was the term, yeah, I was looking for so long.
Ah, there we go. There we go. I'm glad Jesus. We got to the bottom of that.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're good. So Randy Arozarena, listen, we're at 15. I think there's plenty of honorable mentions. As I mentioned before, like when you're combining positions, there's going to be some deserving candidates left off. So if you have, you know, someone else, like I know you had Nolan Jones, for instance. I had Brian Reynolds. I know Dalton Varsho was in high consideration for me as a bounce back.
James Altman had a really good rookie year.
Yeah. Like Stephen Kwan is in a lot of people's lists. So, you know, there's a couple of guys that have strong arguments. And if you put them ahead of Randy, that's perfectly fine. I think you have to include playoff performance in these, just like I believe playoff stats should count towards your career stats. I get that changes a lot of outcomes. That's just me. I think playoff stats should count, or at least be weighed heavier than they are currently. So I like Randy a lot. He's a gritty player. He's a fun player to watch. He goes all out, and you know, I hope he winds up at a national someday. But yeah, he's super solid and another Cardinals cast off.
Yeah, another one. And I'm expecting the slug to go up. He only slugged 425, which is that's pretty low for him. Outlier. So I think he's going to go back up in the slugging. And yeah, I had Nolan Jones as my honorable mention. I love him.
Yeah, he was good last year.
Just thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah, he was good last year, so no issues there.
Love me some Nolan Jones.
Yeah, and then, like I mentioned, there's just a bunch of bounce back candidates. Like, I really like Brian Reynolds. I think Dalton Varsho is going to get a second year bump with the Blue Jays. He's already one of the best, if not the best, defensive outfielder there is. And like you mentioned, Nolan Jones. Like, there's a couple of guys that could just easily find their way into.
Say Suzuki had a great
ending
to the season. That could, you know, that momentum could help him.
Yeah. So there's a couple guys. I mean, listen, he was terrible, like average wise last year. But if someone throws Kyle Schwarber in here, just like, I mean, his impact to the team is massive. So I get it. I wouldn't have him there personally.
He has my favorite stat line of any player last year, for sure. Just, it's just absolute. Yeah. It's pure. It
makes
hilarity.
No sense. Yeah. It's like, you know, the meme that runs around on Twitter. It's like, oh, Olivia Rodrigo was born the same day like the Berlin Wall fell. I don't know if that's the exact one, but it's like, oh, welcome back, Berlin Wall or whatever. It's like if Adam Dunn died and that was the same day that Kyle Schwarber was born. It's like, oh, welcome back, Adam Dunn.
Welcome back.
Like, that's kind of how it feels. Yeah. So
he definitely had an Adam Dunn season last year. It's great.
Yeah. He's just as bad defensively.
Yeah, I mean,
I could tell you that
he was
that
the only guy
to
that
be
approached
a permanent DH.
He was the only defensive season that even approached those Adam Dunn years in DC.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yep. So that is our top 15 list. Next week we get into the real conversation with the top 10 starting pitchers, and I think we're going to rattle off our top 10 relief pitchers in that same episode. We won't spend as much time with the relief pitchers. If you've been following us for a couple of years, it's a good conversation, but the relievers are so volatile and they change from year to year outside of the one or two staples that you would come to expect. So we'll do pitchers all together next episode, but we'll definitely spend more time in the top 10 starters, which honestly look a lot different than in years past.
Going to be a fun conversation.
Yeah, the old guard of the starting pitchers has certainly, you know, changed, or they're still around, but they're not quite the same as they were. So it's a good conversation to have with some of the young and impressive arms that we see around baseball. So be sure to check this out. And after that, we get into kind of our season preview stuff, which is always a good time, and I can't wait to do that. So looking forward to it, but be sure to check us out wherever you get your podcasts. So Apple, Spotify, our iHeartRadio, of course. Be sure to check out our YouTube page where the video episodes are posted as well, and be sure to subscribe everywhere. Check us out on TikTok at District Baseball and on Twitter at District BSB. Trey, how do you think we did? Are we brain dead today?
I mean, this was hard.
Debatable.
This was hard, man. I don't think this is a lose-lose list. Like, doesn't matter.
Someone's going to
see
just the graphic and have such a strong reaction that Trout is 8 or whatever he ended up being.
Yeah, it's just
we
brutal.
Kind of explained why.
It's brutal because of that fact right there. It's just like, it just hurts to put some of these guys low or leave them off because there's so many great players. So, but you know what? We got to do it. It's got
to
be done.
Somebody
Ranking
has
season
to.
Has to happen.
Somebody has to.
Yep.
That's our cross to bear. So,
yep.
Cool. Well, we appreciate you guys listening. Like I said, we will be back next week. You should follow us everywhere at Reverse to Ours, to Estes, at the Coach Moose. Spring training's here. Baseball is so close to being back, and we cannot wait. Until next time, see you guys.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.